You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggles, stories, and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found in the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we're welcoming slash preparing to learn from John Helt from Mask Haze LLC. John, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good, James.
So, welcome to the most wonderful business radio show you've ever been on. What is Mask Haze?
Sure. Mask Haze is a development company created to find good training solutions for firefighters and first responders.
Okay. So, tell me what kind of training solutions?
So, our goal is to find the safest, most realistic training solutions to make training safer for firefighters and emergency responders in their day-to-day practices.
Sure. Okay. So, this is, when I first saw this, when you were speaking at 1 Million Cups, it didn't even dawn on me that firefighters actually had to practice stuff. I just assumed you throw on your jacket and your hat, you get the fancy fire truck, and you just instantly know what to do. It didn't even dawn on me, like, wait, I suppose they do have to train for this because they're in some unsafe and some challenging circumstances, so maybe it would make sense to prepare. So are you a firefighter?
I am. I am a volunteer firefighter in Lake Mills.
Okay. So you did this invention, so to speak, did this product come about from your experience?
So it's actually a rather long story, so I'll try to keep it short.
We got the time.
So I'm going on 5 generations of firefighting.
Wow.
All volunteer. I myself went to school to be an engineer.
Okay.
Studied to be a mechanical engineer, graduated, and then had the pure coincidence of having a job in the fire industry building fire trucks.
Okay.
So I did a short stint at Pierce Manufacturing.
Oh, sure.
And had some exposure there besides the upbringing and family exposure.
Right.
And settled in Lake Mills and joined the local volunteer fire department.
Okay.
Being an engineer by trade, always looking to find a solution for a problem.
Sure.
And the fire industry, more specifically than the emergency responder industry in general, is continually pushing to find safer ways to do things.
Okay.
Cancer is becoming a huge component of what's causing medical issues for first responders, more specifically for firefighters, because of the exposure to carcinogens.
Okay, so this is mainly smoke inhalation, or what are the carcinogens in play?
Sure, it's it can be relatively a lot of different things, but primarily it's related to the different types of off gases, the unburned carbons, and the various other substances that are the byproduct of combustion. So,
okay.
Houses are built with new, crazy, weird chemicals
Sure.
and composites that we didn't have hundreds of years ago, or Sure. let alone even 30 years ago.
Sure.
And those chemicals and composites, when they break down and then they burn, they create agents that are now being proven to be cancer-causing. So,
Okay.
Large push in the industry to find safer solutions. So,
sure.
Being an engineer and being in the, joining the fire industry almost 10 years ago.
Wow.
Myself.
Sure.
Trying to find a better way to do stuff, especially when it's going to affect me and
sure.
ultimately my family potentially. Sure. So
That's fair. So the first thing that you guess came to the market was the Mask Haze product.
So actually that's kind of not the case.
Okay.
it appears that way. So in 2012, I actually started a consulting firm doing product development.
Oh.
Being an engineer and having a lot of experience with product development. And while working on other clients' products all the time, you always wonder, what can I do myself? And we were looking for a training solution for the fire department, a solution that wasn't being provided anywhere in the industry.
Okay.
you know, larger fire departments have significant funds and, you know, the ability to build training towers and grounds and campuses and and have dedicated resources just for that. Smaller fire departments have less funding. Sometimes their pure funding comes from, you know, the local fundraiser that they put on once a year.
And a really big bake sale or something.
Mostly pancake breakfast.
So,
you know, we had this, you know, already lack of funds for training, which seems goofy because you can buy a fire truck for $500,000, but yet when it comes to training, you know, where are the funds? So, and then being a smaller department, you tend to have a smaller, you know, fire station. You don't have a ton of room to store things. So if you're going to go to the local lumber yard and build, you know, buy lumber and build a training props, you know, some fake walls or something like that. Usually you can't put it anywhere because you have nowhere to put it. So the initial product of this whole thing started from a company called TBRT Engineering, which is the name of my consulting firm. Which stands for the Big Red Truck.
That's an awesome name.
And we created a modular training. And when I say we, it wasn't just me. It was, you know, my local fire department providing some input and me just putting the pieces together and finding the best solution.
So is this you at Lake Mills saying, hey, there's this problem, I want to find a solution, will you help me? And then being like, sure, let's figure this out?
Well, it was, there's a problem. We're all aware of it.
And the problem is we need to find a way to train, but we don't have space. We don't have a lot of funding.
And we don't have a donated house down the street that we can burn down and practice in for a couple times.
And realistically, that's only a one or two shot deal, right?
Like, exactly.
Once the house is burned down, that's the end of your training.
It's gone.
So if you ever get new guys or something like that to train, the guys or gals, whatever. You can't say, hey, just take our experience from 6 months ago when we burned this house down. And I don't know how routinely houses come up to be burned down.
Not very often.
So,
mainly because there are other exposures that are now problems for neighbors and things like that. I mean, it's the ever-evolving world we're in. You know, it's harder and harder to do some of the things we traditionally did. So we had this problem, and we tossed around some ideas, and I kind of jumped onto it because that's what I do. And and I developed this modular maze system made of panels that's 4 feet tall so that it can be used in an instructor setting so that people can watch. So it mirrors a 4 foot wall, and you can create tunnels and passages and more or less mimic a house or a structure that would have, you know, a fire in. And primarily, the training is mostly for search and rescue. You're looking for, you know, different configurations that you can modularly set up and practice different routines. You know, when you go into a house and you look for fire, you're looking for fire. You know, we need to practice more about how we find, you know, the people in harm's way or the other loved assets, you know, your dogs and cats and things of that sort. So we created this product under the TBRT umbrella, and we marketed it for a couple of years, but didn't have a ton of focus around it. So I built a handful of them for a couple of different departments, and then it kind of went on the back burner.
So let me pause you for a moment here. When you were working with Lake Mills, was the intention to create a marketable commercial product, or was the intention just to create a training product for their use and then kind of... That's where it stopped, I guess.
It was intended to create something for their use, and then it was, oh, wait, this is something that other people could use.
So from a chicken and egg point of view, the intention was not necessarily to create a commercial product. It just turned into that because you're like, hey, this is cool, this is working, and it checks the boxes that we needed to check, so let's market it.
So the product was created, and then I did some social media marketing, and... I threw it on the internet just to see what would happen on our consulting page. And, you know, a couple months went by, and a guy out of Texas called and said, hey, I love your product. I want two of them. So I said, okay, well, how can I work with you to make two of them? And then we sold it for, you know, him. We sold it to him in another department, and then it kind of backed off for a little bit. And part of that was me not putting the emphasis on it. I had picked up some more clients in my consulting business. elevated that a little bit, and then it was about 2 years ago, another problem found its way into the realm of the fire department.
Sure.
And you know, I jumped back in and said, hey, let's find a solution.
Sure.
And that's the product you brought up earlier, which is Mask Haze, and now the flagship brand and the company name.
Sure.
Which is a smoke-altering, non-residue-leaving film that can be reusable. So, mm-hmm. again, back to that primary focus. Let's find something safe for the departments, something that's affordable.
Sure.
And something that, you know, can be effective and realistic. So, sure.
So the idea with that is it's a film that goes over a firefighter's mask.
Correct.
To imitate smoke, essentially, so that when they're training, they can have the imitation of the limited vision, whatever, so to speak.
Correct.
Of the smoke, so that when they're training, they don't have to actually breathe that smoke. They can leave that for the real fires.
Exactly. And it allows for, you know, instructors and trainers to not have to sit in a room filled with fake smoke from a fog machine.
Sure.
Because how can you watch individuals and tell if they're doing things the correct
way?
They're
in there somewhere doing something.
We don't know what they're doing.
Sure, okay.
So, you know, there were various options to mimic smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it used to be back years ago when I was a kid and, you know, I followed my father around the fire station, they'd take a roll of duct tape and they'd duct tape the front of the mask.
So you couldn't see anything?
You couldn't see anything.
Okay.
It's not realistic.
Hopefully not.
It was a pain.
Sure.
Because when it came time to clean it, we all know how duct tape comes off.
Well, yeah, the whole point is that it actually sticks, right?
It's so now not gonna
you're asking
off.
It not to do that.
Right. So, you know, that was duct tape. And then when I joined the fire service in Lake Mills, it was, you know, wax paper, or you take your fire hood and turn it around backwards. So now you can't actually put your air mask piece in and breathe air. So you'd go around and pretend you're breathing air. With your hood backwards, not realistic. Again, blackout, you couldn't see anything.
Sure.
So then it evolved, and then somebody had a crazy idea somewhere else in the U.S. and said, hey, what if we take that press and seal kitchen wrap that everybody covers their vegetables with, and let's put that on the mask, because you can kind of see through it, and it's a little bit like smoke.
Sure.
It's cheap, you know, let's try that.
Right.
So in Lake Mills, we were trying that, too, with the maze that I had already built years prior. And, you know, the more and more we used it, the worse it got. And the residue was almost as bad as duct tape, if not worse.
Was it really?
And you couldn't clean it. And it was so sticky. If you left it on too long, it almost created a hazard, because now you're exposing new chemicals to a piece of equipment you are going to take into a burning building.
Sure.
And if those chemicals react goofy with heat, you could compromise your own mask.
Okay.
So, you know, not a good idea. So, I had been doing some consulting with a graphics company and that specialized in ways to adhere, you know, vinyl to substrates.
Sure.
And they had done a lot of research in this industry, and so I partnered up with them and presented this problem I was having on the side from what else we were doing.
Sure.
And said, hey, I think I can make realistic smoke in a filter if you can give me a substrate that leaves no residue.
Mm-hmm.
So after about a year of development back and forth between the two of us, I had created a pattern that alters light the same way unburned carbon in smoke does. So.
Okay.
When you see smoke, you're seeing unburned carbon.
Sure.
And what you see is just a refraction of the light that's ambient. So whether it's outside light, light in a room, sun coming through a window, things like that. And how you see that is just a refraction. So I created a pattern out of that, because most of what you see is actually just a pattern.
Sure.
And we took that pattern and then we interlaced that into a piece of vinyl. And then we printed a hue over top of it, so like a graying effect, to add that darkening so that you can't see through it. So the pattern itself actually alters light like smoke. So visibility, clarity, and density of an image an inch away from your face is just like what you would see in a smoke-filled room if there was some light behind it.
Gotcha.
A foot away from your face, and now we're talking, you know, a magnitude of 12.
Right.
It's gone.
Okay.
So it's just like real smoke, and it's crazy how it works that way. So we took that, figured out how to die-cut it to match an SCBA, which is self-contained breathing apparatus,
i.e. the mask. Okay.
And we added their non-residue leaving solution that we had come up with after some testing, and we created a product that is realistic, leaves no residue, and along the way we found out that we could reuse it over and over.
I mean,
you can take the film, crumple it in a ball like you would with like masking tape or duct tape.
Sure.
You know, you can't pull it back apart.
Right.
You can pull this apart and it forms back to its original shape.
Oh, very cool.
So super realistic, super reusable, and very much affordable.
Sure.
So that was the second product. We launched that at FDIC, which is the Fire Department Instructors Conference. It's the largest trade show in the U.S. for fire departments.
Okay.
And it took off like wildfire. So
nice.
We had a product that was morphing into its own entity.
Okay.
Not necessarily a business of its own yet.
Sure.
But then we did some business stuff, and you know, a couple months in, we decided to split it away from the consulting group and let it be itself. So
sure.
Company morphed into MassKays LLC with a flagship product, which is the smoke simulation film called MassKays.
Okay.
And then after about 6 to 8 months of that doing itself, we thought, hey, maybe we should bring the maze back into the mix.
Sure.
See what happens. We now have a customer base that we can now introduce a second product that is, you know, adjacent in the market space. So we launched the maze, and then that took off. So we've been producing 2 to 4 mazes a month since September.
Oh, wow.
And it's been pretty good. So
nice.
That's a long answer to your question about you know, the original product, but you got both of them there. So
let's talk about the maze initially, since that was the first one. From a manufacturing standpoint, I imagine that's a challenge, because now you got to find a manufacturer that's willing to put this together. And then there's a size issue, where the lens cover essentially is fairly small. Slap it in an envelope, throw a few stamps on it, and away you go. The maze, that is not the case. That's probably pallet, I imagine, to ship
it
that
is.
Thing?
It is palletized.
So when the guy in Texas calls you up and says, hey, I want a couple of these, you're like, oh, there's $500 in shipping. My rule is it's a small world until you want to ship something.
That's pretty good. You know, we did hit that hurdle at one point. So the original maze that we made for Lake Mills, I made for Lake Mills with the help of some other people, because it wasn't a business yet.
Right.
Was built in a barn.
Okay, well, best place.
Right? And the original one was plywood and steel.
Okay, heavy.
With no intent of, you know, making it lightweight and modular.
Sure.
Just something that you could set up and take down and it would store well.
Okay.
You know, but your
fire... Was the idea that the practice would take place in that barn?
No.
No, okay.
The barn was purely just a place to build it.
Gotcha, okay. Somebody had space, and there you are. Okay.
Exactly. Another guy in the fire department.
Sure.
Who's a farmer. So.
Okay.
We built that, and it worked well. But then when it came time to make a commercial-ready product, we set up the same barn and tooled up, I guess you should say. I invested a lot of money in some tooling.
Sure.
You know, welders and tables and... We built what is now closely related, the aluminum and plastic version.
Okay.
The lightweight.
Sure.
You know, go back to that premise of safe.
Sure.
Well, if we're going to have firefighters pick up a steel and wood panel, we don't want them to hurt their back. Right. So let's go back and find a lightweight, durable.
Sure.
So the plastic that goes into the panel is actually the same hair cell ABS plastic that used to be used in fire trucks to skin the doors for kick plates.
Oh, really?
They now use brushed aluminum, but back then it was very common to see it. It's a readily available thermoplastic high-impact ABS.
Sure.
So we just took it from somewhere else in the industry and
sure.
slapped it
you
on.
You totally sound like an engineer.
I'm sorry.
It's just that's a good thing. That's a very good thing. I'm just like, it's tough plastic. Okay.
So we slapped it on an aluminum frame that was the same as the steel frame.
Okay.
And then...
So same dimensions, just...
Same like dimensions.
10th of the weight, I imagine.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
So now it's lightweight, still stores the same.
Sure.
It's still modular.
Mm-hmm.
And we threw one of those together, put it in Lake Mills and used that for a while, and realized that that was where the product was for the market.
Mm-hmm.
So we've reduced the weight. The guy in Texas, you know, calls and says, hey, I want one of these.
Sure.
How, you know, at that point I was ambitious and wanted to at least get it out there because he was customer number two and
sure.
customer number one paying. So,
right.
you know, he says, hey, here's my budget.
Right.
What can you do? So,
sure.
you know.
So he found this on your website?
He found it on Facebook.
Oh, nice. Okay. So he didn't necessarily have any pricing or stuff like that. He just said, this is cool. Let's figure this out.
Yeah, I can't remember if we threw some stupid number at it.
Okay.
Can I say stupid?
You can totally say stupid.
I don't know if we did that or not, but, you know, he called and said, I want to. I've got a budget and I've got a grant. You know, we got it approved by our, because it was a... forestry fire
okay,
grant
sure.
in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
He did all the legwork to get it approved on the grant
nice.
List, so I was like, well, I can't say no to you. I guess I'll build you one.
Right.
So
so this is you building them, though, right?
This was still me building them.
So this is not... The manufacturer hasn't come into play yet.
Nope. So we put two of them together, and you know, I got a 4x8 pallet, because the
mm-hmm.
biggest panel's 4x8.
All right.
And then
you're talking 4 foot by 8 foot.
4 foot by 8 foot.
That's a big pallet, okay.
That's a very big pallet. And I went online and I was like, you know, you read magazines, entrepreneur magazines, you see stuff. And it was called uship.com.
Okay.
So I went to, or I used this service.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And they brokered a freight and... A truck showed up the next day and
oh, wow.
threw it in the back of the truck and
sure.
off to Texas it went.
Huh.
And I think it cost me, you know, a couple $100.
Sure.
Nothing.
Okay. Not millions of dollars.
No,
or anything.
No.
Okay.
So, you know, it wasn't a big deal. I was like, well, that was too easy.
Sure.
let's keep going with it. So
sure.
We kind of, I mean, that was years ago and then it sidelined for a little bit and then
mm-hmm.
it came back and... You know, since then, you know, we've added a distributor network that
okay.
sells it for us, and then they pay for the shipping because they're charging the customer for the shipping.
Sure.
So it's usually just a pre-negotiated freight rate.
Okay. And are you giving them a bunch, or not giving, but are you selling them essentially a bunch of panels or kits, so to speak, that they keep in their warehouse?
We don't actually send anything to the distributor. It's all drop shipped. It's
oh.
made to order.
Gotcha. Okay.
So they sell it just like a distributor or a dealer would sell a fire truck.
Sure.
Then the fire department would, you know, get some progress that it's being built, and then it
sure.
would ship out to them.
So it just shows up one day.
Just kind of the same
sure.
sales cycle as buying
sure.
a fire truck.
So I have no idea what that's like, but I imagine it's, there's a lot of bells and whistles, like boxes you can check.
Yeah, you pick your custom options.
Sure.
And, you know, we started with a panel set that was stock, and now
mm-hmm.
we have all kinds of options. You can,
okay. So I was just going to ask that. Are there additional add-ons and stuff like that? I don't know what they would be, but...
Sure. So there's windows and dropout floors and doors and...
Okay.
There's a... In the fire industry, there's a point when you do it, when you go through your evolution of training, where you have to figure out how you're gonna breach a wall. So
okay.
the best way they practice that is they set up 2x4, 16 on sender, which is standard for building in
sure.
a house.
Mm-hmm.
They put drywall over it and tell you to break through and then crawl through the 16.
That's
inch on center.
Tight.
It's very tight, especially when you got an air pack on your back.
Sure.
So, the whole goal is you actually have to take the air pack off and still breathe the air connected to it.
Oh.
Get through it, and then
sure.
get back out. So we created a panel that has that with a removable guide so that you
okay.
can just keep dropping drywall into it.
Sure.
And the rest of it's rigid plastic and aluminum. So,
huh.
And then, you know, we have other add-ons for different types of situations. It still starts with the primary panel set, which is,
sure.
you know, various sizes from 4x8 down to 2x4.
Okay.
Foot, you know, rectangular panels.
Sure. So the majority of the, like, what is the number of panels that are typically included?
So we typically include, like, four 4x8s, four 4x4, and then two 2x4 panels.
Okay.
You can get a pretty good room created.
Okay.
In that room, you know, you can have some things that jot out into the room and you have to work around, like,
okay,
you know, closet doors or things like that.
Sure.
So we sell that standard set, and then from there you can add a la carte panels or or the specialty panels.
Sure.
Or,
how do the panels fasten to each other?
They use a 5/16 cotter pin clevis pin system.
Oh, okay.
So you slide a clevis pin into it, and then you clip it with a cotter pin, and it locks it together.
Okay, so very easy.
Very easy. There's a multitude of holes that are drilled all the way around the frame, so you can configure it in any which way. A lot like Legos.
Sure.
If I can say Legos.
You can totally... It's not quite China. We're fine. That's interesting. So from the... I guess this has been going on. The maze itself has been going on for a couple of years, right? So what is some of the feedback that you've gotten from some of the firefighters and departments that have purchased it?
So one of the original issues was people had trouble with the pins.
Okay.
And part of it was just not sizing the correct pin.
Back
to actually a design issue. So on paper and when you manufacture it works, but you never thought about the fact that some fire stations don't have level floors.
Oh, so
when you put panels next to each other and it's not a level floor, they bind.
All right.
So we had to open up the tolerances, actually go to a smaller pin, and create room for them to flex more. So
okay.
So that, and then adding more holes. So the original panel set had four holes in every corner, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now there's like 64 holes on a panel.
So that's
much more modular.
All right.
So just adding more holes allowed for more modularity to the product.
Did that add to the expense of manufacture?
So it adds to the expense, but at the time we were building, you know, one maze panel at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we're building multiple panels together.
Sure.
So, you know, we were able to do more work with the manufacturer to to create more cellular systems. So we could, you know, manufacture all of component A, which is an 8-foot long 1x1 eighth inch aluminum square tube.
Okay.
You know, that gets 16 holes in it. Well, we're gonna make, you know, 100 of that part rather than 4 of that part, build a panel set, make another 4 of that part, you know.
Gotcha.
So we just combined, you know, it goes back to, you know, the volume situation. You know,
that's fair.
Higher volume, you can cut your price
lower
down.
Lower cost, So tell me, how tough was it to find a manufacturer to put these together?
So, because I was consulting as a product development engineer.
Sure.
And I have a lot of experience working with contract manufacturers all over.
Mm-hmm.
So I partnered with another contract manufacturer that had some experience in the fire industry and was very good with aluminum because the primary part of this is welding the aluminum frame together. So.
Which is challenging. I come from a mechanic background, so I know welding, and I'm terrible at it. I'm terrible at steel. So you introduce aluminum, that's challenging.
It is. I mean, the original one was steel, and we could MIG it together.
Sure.
And then the second version was aluminum, and then we got away with MIGging it together because TIG welding's a lot harder than MIG welding.
Yep, so yep.
That one was MIG'd together, and then the more current one was actually TIG'd together.
Okay.
So we now have a real nice weld bead on everything. You know, I can't say that the original ones looked very good. In fact, I think the...
Not the row of dimes people want?
No, I think we actually sanded all of the welds just to make them look good to get those out the door. I mean, you're starting up and you want it to look good, but you can't get it to look good.
There's a reality comes in. I get it. In the end, it holds. So it's doing the job, right? So it's not the end of the world. But
yes, it's very... It has the same, you know, welded joint. Mm-hmm. It's just didn't look pretty.
Sure. So you're an engineer, so did you come up with all the CAD drawings and stuff like that to hand to the manufacturer, and they just spit some stuff out and away you go, or was it a little more challenging than that?
It was a little bit more challenging, but we did create, I say we, but at this point it was me.
Okay.
I created all the CAD files for the product, and then, you know, being that we were already developing product for other manufacturers, the standards and principles were pretty much there.
Okay.
You know, there was some feedback, hey, can we make it this way instead of that way, and make it a little bit more manufacturable.
Feedback from the manufacturer?
Correct.
Okay.
And, you know, over time we've morphed that together. And
sure.
Created some pretty stable processes.
Okay. So this manufacturer, they got the aluminum and all that kind of stuff taken care of. Do you have to go through somewhere else for the plastic panels themselves?
So the vendor for the plastic is at the time was the same vendor that offered the aluminum.
Oh, nice.
When we built it in the barn, we bought both of them from the same vendor. Just purely luck that this metal vendor had a plastics division.
Right.
Since then, the plastics vendor that supplies the manufacturer has changed.
Okay.
Due to sourcing, we were able to, you know, cut the cost in half by buying it from a plastics guy rather than from a metal guy that stocks plastic.
Sure. Okay.
And, you know, negotiated some pricing, you know, commitments on some volume, things like that. So the manufacturer that makes the panel set had no problem bringing the plastic in.
Okay.
It's already cut to size. They just have to cut it from the 4x8 down to a 4x4 or a 2x4.
Okay.
Which is just a mechanical shear that they shear a metal on.
Okay.
They could also shear the plastic on.
So. Probably easier on the blade to cut plastic than this metal.
So they shear it to size.
Sure.
And then lay it out, and then the plastic is actually screwed with stainless screws.
Okay.
And they had no problem doing that.
So sure.
It was just a value-added step on their end. And,
gotcha.
You know, it becomes a cost of their labor. That's okay. about it.
So what do one of these panels weigh?
So they range. The smaller panel is around 10 pounds, and they go up to about 35 pounds.
Okay. So still easily handleable by a person.
Correct.
Okay.
We do have a new option for the panels where instead of plastic, we are offering it with an aluminum metal insert rather than a plastic sheet over it.
And why would they do that?
Well, it's the fire industry, and they always want something that's never going to break. So
if
they want to pay for it, we'll sell it to them. So,
But I imagine that adds a little bit to the weight then,
it
right?
It almost doubles the weight of the plastic the plastic panel within reason there. But, you know, they're getting something that's a little bit more superior.
Sure.
I think it's more of a feel good to have something more durable than an actual need to have it more durable because the plastic itself is pretty durable. So.
Right. It sounds like it. So interesting. So how do you have employees or how does this work? I guess how is the business set up?
So right now the business is set up with three part-time employees, myself included, because I still have another business that I'm actively running.
Okay.
Until it continues to grow, because the majority of this whole thing picked up in the last year and a half. And,
oh, very cool.
You know,
because one you're pushing it or
not really. This was mostly organic. We went to a trade show and found a distributor that fell in love with the product and wanted to sell it for us. So.
Oh, nice. You're like, no, we're pretty cool. Not making money here. That's cool.
So you know, I mean. Like I said, it was that point where we had to actually create a separate company just to see what it would do because it was. So right now we have, you know, three part-time employees that are running it with myself included. I mean, I don't take any compensation for it because it's still a startup. But you know, we're getting it off the ground and you know it is successful.
Sure. So is the idea that this will be your business, or is the idea to build it up and sell it, or what's the goal?
The idea is that at some point I can do less consulting
and
run this primarily as its own business and then see where the world goes.
Okay.
We do have another backlog of products. I just told myself I can't start a new one until these ones get further along.
Like ideas for products and stuff like that?
So, yeah, with the industry, the fire industry, continually looking for safer things to do, you know, your receptors are up.
Sure.
What's unsafe and what should we be doing?
Sure. So, it's so funny that you say that. I was talking to my business planning class last week. And I said, and this is first week, right? Mm-hmm. And they go around the classroom saying, hey, this is who I am. This is a business I'm thinking of starting. And I asked them, you know, how many of you guys have more than one business idea? And most of them are like, what? What are you crazy, right? And these are first time, not yet entrepreneurs, right? Mm-hmm. They're just kicking tires. Some of them are dreamers and some actually will end up starting a business, right? But then this one woman came up to me at the end of class and she's like, you know, you asked me that question. I thought that's a dumb question. I only have one idea. But as class was going on, I was like, no. I came up with nine. I got nine things rolling around in my head. I'm like, there's no such thing as an entrepreneur that only has one idea.
Right.
Because you're constantly, as soon as you get that one, you're always looking for that next thing.
It's true.
Constant, yeah. I mean, which is a good thing.
It is.
But then you got to say no to 90% of them because you have to get that 10% rolling.
So it's goofy you say that because this is not the first product or business that I came out of consulting.
Sure. Okay.
We had one prior to this, and I tried to stop it.
Okay. You
know, I was like, tried I to can't stop do this anymore.
Okay.
I was like, we're done with this. And part of it was because that business was the pure reason that MassCase could not longer be under the TBR&T business umbrella because of insurance.
Oh, sure.
So we had to split it. Mm-hmm. Because we were too much of a liability with the two businesses in one.
Sure.
Apparently, the fire industry is very risky for insurance companies.
Oh, interesting.
Even though it's training and never exposed to harm. So, either way.
Wherever they can charge you, they will.
Exactly. So, I had an idea for a different business, and we ran it for a couple of years, and then I said, we're done. I'm done. I'm going to do this business instead. And,
sure.
And, I still get people that want to buy that product, and there are an infinite amount of, you know, adjacent products in that market, but that business needed more attention and was not going to grow organically without me touching it. So I tried to stop it. So now I just have a website that sits out there, and when people order something for it, I fulfill the order by... It's made to order and just kind of stays on its own.
All right. All right.
We'll never grow because I'm not giving it anything, but
it
too has an industry where there's nobody else supplying another product.
Oh, interesting.
Hard to gauge how big that industry is because.
Sure.
So, but yeah, we're here talking about MassCase, so I don't want to bore you with that old.
No, it's all business stuff. So part of the interest here in Authentic Business Adventures is just learning even about businesses that don't make it.
Sure.
So was this one making money?
Yes, it makes money.
So it was making money, it was just a pain in the butt kind of thing?
It's a pain in the butt.
Okay.
And you can say butt. I'm very cautious here about what I say.
There are probably only seven words we can't say, I imagine. You probably know them, so we'll just keep it at that.
So what it was is, I think you and I share a common passion for cars.
Yes, definitely. To a fault.
So, when I was a kid, I bought a truck and restored it and have this 1950 Chevy pickup truck.
Oh, awesome.
While I was working in the medical industry, you know, I was bored one day apparently and said, you know, I need a trailer hitch for my truck. Let's look in the market and see if I can buy one.
Sure.
So I spent, you know, like every engineer, a month researching to see if I could find something else.
Sure.
There. Wasted way more time than I should have, especially for what my time's probably worth.
Right.
And couldn't find anything. So I was like, well, I could figure this out. This isn't that hard.
Right.
So I drew up a trailer hitch and had a business meeting with, ironically, a plastics manufacturer.
Okay.
And completely different plastic than the MassCase plastic, by the way. But, and I said, hey, do you know anybody that can make this trailer hitch? You know, I was in the medical industry. We weren't making trailer hitches.
Right. Not a lot of competition or direct competition to your employer.
Right. So, I was like, I need this trailer hitch. And this was purely for me. It wasn't a business.
Sure.
And, this plastic manufacturer said, yeah, we've got this group up in Reedsburg.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they could make it for you. So I called them and introduced myself. I said, hey, you know, I'm looking for this simple weldment. You think you could make it for me? Yeah. So drew it up in CAD.
Sure.
And sent a picture and a print to them and said, here's what I need. Can you make it?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And they sent me back a quote, and I was like, I almost fell off the chair. It was cheaper than buying a trailer hitch for my new truck at Farm and Fleet. Nice. It's like, are you kidding me? It's that cheap?
Sure.
So I was like, okay, well, you know, we'll get one and see if it works.
Yeah.
So I bought one, and I had him make me one, and I threw it on my truck, and well, that's pretty slick.
Yeah.
So as, you know, you're being in the cars, you go on a forum, and you post, hey, anybody, you know, I know anybody's not interested in this. Anybody be interested if I made a bunch of these?
Sure.
Just kind of test the market.
Mm-hmm.
So I threw it out there, and it just... Ooh, this is great. Really?
Sure.
You think you can make these? And
right.
I knew what I could get them. I could buy them from this place in Reedsburg for it.
Sure.
Like, well, there's a market to make some good margin on
right,
this.
Right.
So I set up a cheap website and threw it out there. And next thing you know, I get an order here and an order there. And Classic Custom Truck Magazine did a whole article on me, and I didn't even know about it.
Oh,
funny. I was like, oh my gosh. So I
must have been quite the detailed article, right?
It was half a page.
Wow.
I was like, that's expensive advertising.
Sure, right?
So I was like, okay. So I still have that magazine, obviously.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then...
They didn't call you up and say, hey, just to verify any facts?
Nothing. I had no clue. I was like, awesome. Something's goofy going on.
Right. Solid reporting.
Well, it was goofy, and I'm like... Well, the reason I thought it was goofy is I was like, where did all these sales go? You know, it like died down for a little bit, and all of a sudden I got like... 5 or 6 sales in 2 days. I was like,
wow,
holy buckets. I was like,
right.
You know, something's goofy going on here.
Sure.
So I went on the internet and just typed in my company's
right.
name, and sure enough, their online thing popped up.
Oh, that's funny.
They had the same article online.
Sure.
So, you know, I was like, okay, well, maybe this is something. So went to a couple car shows that I always was going to already. And,
sure.
You know, you hand them... a card and say, hey, can I, at the time it was my consulting business card, can I crawl under your car and measure some stuff?
Sure. Or to create different trailer hitches for multiple vehicles.
So I made them for like, they were all for pickup trucks from 1947 to 1959.
Okay.
Ford, Chevy, GMC.
Okay.
So I drew up a whole bunch of them, and I called people in Reedsburg and said, what's my minimum? How many do I have to get my price to this point?
Sure.
And I said, oh, you know, 5, 10 maybe.
Sure.
Okay, that's not bad. I could inventory 5 or 10 of
right,
these.
Right, right.
You know, no money put into this thing.
Sure.
It's just like, it started with me needing a trailer hitch. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, so I did that, and, you know, and then it kind of died down, and I had no clue what the trend in the industry was. I was just like, you know, this is a side thing, whatever. And, you know, one random day, all of a sudden, I get another day of surge with a whole bunch of them. I'm like, what is going on?
Right.
Sure enough, I type in Google, and up pops a totally different website. Come to find out, it was related to the other one. They reran the article in a different magazine.
Oh, funny. That's awesome.
Okay. So how many people don't know about this because there is nothing on the market?
Right.
So I was like, okay, you know, and it kind of died down, and I figured out where the trends are. It's when people don't drive their cars that they want to do this.
Or sure.
They want to do it mid-restoration, which is usually in the winter. So I was like, okay. So, you know, and things were kind of going down.
Right.
You know, I wasn't putting any effort into it. It was just whenever somebody ordered one, I stopped carrying inventory on it. And I was
right.
Like, it was like, you know, okay, you know, to die down on the whole thing, I'll raise the price.
Mm-hmm.
If people really want it, they're going to pay a premium for it.
Sure.
So, you know, I doubled my price.
Right.
Purely profit increase.
Right.
And, you know, I'd get an order here, and I'd get an order there, and it's like, okay, and then Mask Hays evolved.
Sure.
The insurance company said you can't have a trailer hitch company and a fire. You got two big liabilities.
Sure.
Okay, I'll split them.
Yeah, I was wondering about the trailer hitch liability thing. I don't know, like,
well, I mean,
you're an
I
engineer,
could...
so you can figure out weights and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
What it can pull.
And I could get liability insurance for it, and I could get liability insurance for the fire thing, but
sure.
I couldn't get them together.
Oh, interesting.
So I created...
We need 2 premiums.
So I created an entirely new LLC with the flagship Mask Hays at the time.
Sure,
Because the Maze wasn't in play. It had taken a break.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we created this other one, and it's kept it separate, and I'm like, I should just be done with the trailer hitches.
Sure, sure.
So I did another rate increase.
Okay.
I threw the price up high. No more inventory. I even put on the internet, you know, looking for a buyer for trailer hitch business.
Sure.
I was even going to sell it.
Right.
Had nobody interested in buying it, or I don't even know if anybody knew it was for sale. It was just on my website. I didn't advertise it.
Sure. Said,
if you're interested, at the bottom. And then it kind of went away for like almost a year. I didn't have very much. And then, you know, Mass Case took off. And last year I sold more trailer hitches than I ever did since it started.
Oh, really?
And they're all made to order and the price is through the roof because I'm not going to stock them. So
sure.
Let's charge a premium if they really want it. And nobody can buy them anywhere else.
Sure.
U-Haul came out with a thing where, hey, if you bring your truck to us in Arizona, we'll custom fit one for you.
Okay.
It's like, nobody's going to do that unless you live in Arizona.
Right, right.
So there's still a market.
Oh, interesting.
So I was like, okay, well, I'll just keep it out there. I'm not really going to do anything with it, but, you know, it's some side cash for whatever. And if someday I decide that, you know, I need to find another avenue, maybe I'll focus some time on that and balance out the rest of life.
Right, right.
It's kind of a backup, I guess you should say.
So that's fair.
It wasn't successful, but it isn't a dud.
Sure.
It's kind of just there.
That's fair. That's fair. It was just taking time away from your other projects.
And it takes a lot of time for that business.
Sure.
There's a lot of customer service, a lot of people that want to know, you sure this is going to fit? Oh. You know, a lot of back and forth.
Sure.
You know, and the price point, it's there, but it's not enough for all the time you put into it.
Sure.
And then to grow the business, you got to spend a ton of time designing, validating new vehicles that you don't have.
Sure.
So.
Sure.
It just.
That's fair.
It was an opportunity cost issue.
Sure. That's all right.
So.
I totally understand it. So now, Mass Case has been running for a year, 2 years?
About a year and a half.
Year and a half. Okay.
As its own entity.
Okay.
The Mays portion of it's been there since September. And the Mask Haze flagship product has been there about the year and a half.
So how do you market these products to firefighters? Because that's a pretty niche market.
So it's something we're still working on.
Okay.
You know, part of our big push was we got some big distributors that we partnered with that absolutely love our product and push it like nobody's business.
Okay.
So that helps greatly.
Sure.
We found that, you know, selling the Maze is a much more profitable.
Oh, okay. Just because it's a bigger ticket?
Bigger ticket.
Okay.
You know, you got to sell, I have never done the math, but you got to sell probably 50 to 100 of the Mass Case product to try to get to the price level the Maze product is at.
Sure.
So, I mean, the margins are the same, but you're talking small item, big item. So, you know, we leaned on our distributor network and none of them picked up the Maze right away.
Okay.
And then the largest one of them all said, yeah, we'll try the Maze.
Okay.
So we spent a good chunk of time figuring out, hey, how can we market this?
And sure.
It's like, so we said, you know, when is your big sales meeting? Your people that go on the ground and knock on doors. And
sure.
Can we give them like a kit to help them?
Sure.
So we created this kit that showed people what the Maze was and how good it was, brochures and a jump drive that was autoplay that they could shove in a, you know, or a download so they could put it on their iPad. And, you know, we sent those out and they put it on their, you know, in their sales meeting and the salespeople just blew up about it because there was nothing else they could sell like it. And
oh, very cool.
It's a, you know, they don't have to stock it and they don't have to ship it. And everything's taken care of by us. All they have to do is introduce it.
Okay.
It's a perfect product for a sales guy that's going on the door. Right. So they're pretty happy. And it's a grant ready product. So, you know,
grant ready, what does that mean specifically now?
So, you know, in most states you have fire grants. There, there's federal grants too to to, you know, supplement the lack of resources in the community.
Sure.
So the products qualify for grant ready because it's training related. So meaning that when they write a grant for something, they can write the grant for this and it qualifies.
Gotcha.
Other products may not. So,
so
both
they have to describe and almost sell them getting the grant and sell them on the product that they would purchase with the grant, where yours, they don't have to, that second portion
exactly
is taken care of.
Correct. Okay. And both our products are grant ready, but nobody's going to use a grant to buy the mass case. The price point's low.
Because it's so cheap. Okay. They're so affordable.
Affordable,
I mean.
Thank you.
I just had that conversation with one of my employees.
The maze, on the other hand, is the perfect grant product. So
okay.
Price point wise.
Sure.
It helps out quite a bit.
Nice.
So, yeah.
So where's the business going from here?
So you know, we're adding more distributors because we only have our primary distributor network is in the Midwest and the Upper East Coast.
Okay.
The majority of the maize product is sold in Texas, which we don't even have a distributor.
Okay.
So they're buying it online from the distributor on the East Coast, sure. Or they're buying it direct from us.
Okay.
So we're opening up new distributor channels, and mm-hmm. then we're putting together an actual sales demo that's of our own.
Okay.
The fire service is very traditional in the fact that the majority of the product is still sold door to door.
Oh, really? Okay.
A rep comes out, shows gotcha. You the product, you see it, and go, hey, I could use that.
Sure.
It's a traditional
you
industry.
You got to cover a lot of ground to make
you
some
do.
Sales.
So that's why we're pushing the distributor mm-hmm. and partnering with, if a distributor shows itself, you know, we'd get a maze out to them and they'd actually mm-hmm. show it.
Sure.
So putting together some demo units with, you know, with a trailer or whatnot. Or, sure. Or doing a national tour of some sort where
sure.
we get a brand ambassador that's going to load up in a truck and gotcha. You know, our distributors know when it's coming to their mm-hmm. area and they schedule some stuff. So
sure.
we're currently testing that sales strategy here locally where we can manage it.
Okay.
And go from department to department. And,
sure.
And the likelihood is that'll work pretty well.
Nice.
Most people, if they see it, they,
sure.
You know, and they
get it.
They can be shown that it's, you know, like a grant ready or mm-hmm. it's functional or whatnot, then it works well.
Sure.
Or they can, you know, do the demo and on their local, you know, St. John's Bay Fire Facebook page, they mm-hmm. can, hey, look at this cool prop, you know.
Sure.
Maybe, you know, at our next fundraiser, our pancake breakfast, we can raise money for this and then, you know, social media sure. does what it does and then sure. people show up and they might buy one.
So is there a finite capacity? Because once every fire department in the world has these, they're durable enough? Or?
Yeah, to some degree.
Okay.
But I would have to sell 33,000 of the mazes. So.
All right. Well, good luck, man.
Because there's 33,000 fire departments.
Is there really?
In the U.S. alone. And
wow.
We sell the mass case product all around the world, but we have not shipped a maze anywhere.
Okay.
We do have...
it's just cost prohibitive, or...?
Nobody's asked.
Okay.
I mean, I should take that back. We have a military base in mm-hmm. Central Europe.
Okay.
That is waiting for some FEMA.
Okay.
Or not FEMA. I can't remember. It's
insert acronym here.
Yes. It's some type of world...
Sure.
Group that provides support for stuff, and they recently inquired about it. And
okay.
We're looking for four of them
sure.
to go to the same place.
Oh, very cool.
So it's kind of neat because we find, you know, a lot of them have become custom. We'll sell
mm-hmm.
two here, or, you know, there's a whole county in Texas that bought a handful of them for this department, a handful for this department.
Sure.
It was managed at the county level.
Sure.
So, they can get together and put them all together, and now they have one giant one.
Could these mazes expand to other, like beyond firefighters, to police or something of that nature?
It could. We've had some police interest.
Okay.
For like clearing rooms, creating
sure.
modularity for
sure.
a clearing room scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is you'd need like way more panels.
Sure. Well, that's a good problem for you, right?
It is. It's just, you know, convincing them that training for clearing rooms is, you know, worth the investment.
That's fair. That's fair. Totally fair.
So,
John, where can people find more information about the MassKays products?
So our website is yeah. www.masskays.com.
Okay, so MASKHAZE.com.
Correct.
It's almost too easy. So I appreciate you coming out here, John. This is some cool stuff.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the time and the interest.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see in another year or two where what new products you guys have added to the MassKays line.
Yeah.
So things
I'm
to
excited
come.
Too.
Things to come. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land, coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com. As well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our wonderful guest, John Hilt from Mask Hayes LLC, that is at maskhayes.com. John, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
This has been awesome. Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunprairiemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We will see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, you know what to do. Enjoy your business.